AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. After months of snags and failures, the government's healthcare website seems to be working a lot better. As the White House reports, 1.1 million people now finding health insurance coverage through the exchange. AP correspondent Josh Letterman reports that the White House is encouraged by the big push just before the Christmas Eve deadline.
One thing the administration is glad about is the numbers and the interest surged in the week right before Christmas. Now, that's the final time that people had to sign up before the end of the year so that they could get coverage starting January 1st.
There are still big questions remaining, including the age and health of most of those in that surge. Is a majority older, less healthy, or young and healthy people who are considered key to the success of the Affordable Care Act? At least 14 people are dead. Scores more have been hurt in a suicide bombing at a railway station in southern Russia.
A suicide bomber detonated explosives at the entrance of a railway station in the city of Volgograd in southern Russia, according to Russian officials.
The AP's Vladimir Isachenkov reports that the attack raises concerns about terrorism ahead of the Winter Olympics in Sochi. Secretary of State John Kerry heads to the Middle East to try again to push along talks between the Israelis and Palestinians. Our Jackie Quinn reports.
The State Department says Secretary of State John Kerry will leave on New Year's Day for Israel and the Palestinian territories, where he'll discuss ongoing negotiations with leaders from both sides. It's hoped the visit will help spur the talks to create a long, elusive deal for peace. When Kerry announced that direct talks had started up again over the summer, he emphasized their importance.
I wouldn't be here now if I didn't have a belief that this is possible, but it's difficult.
A target was set for April, but so far there has been little sign of progress. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
This is AP Radio News. The family of a 13-year-old California girl declared brain dead says a New York hospital may be willing to take her.
A family member and the family's lawyer won't give the name of the hospital in New York that might accept 13-year-old Jahi McMath. They say they don't want media attention to hurt her chance of being accepted. Two facilities in California had agreed to accept the girl, but then backed out. Jahi's uncle, Omari Seeley, says he knows time is running out to arrange a nursing home for his niece.
We'll have to go in court and we'll have to buy time. I mean, we're going to have to do this by any means necessary.
That tape courtesy KGO TV. A judge has ruled Children's Hospital of Oakland may remove Jahi from a ventilator at 5 p.m. Monday unless an appeal is filed. I'm Carlotta Bradley.
The U.S. Geological Survey says a 4.1 magnitude earthquake early this morning woke some folks north-northeast of Oklahoma City. A second smaller 2.5 magnitude quake was also reported in another part of Oklahoma. No injuries or damage. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
Hi, I'm Rory Coakley with Coakley Realty. Did you know that Big Brothers Big Sisters utilizes over 100 plus years experience to deliver life-changing mentoring to at-risk children? Big Brothers Big Sisters helps vulnerable kids reach their full potential through one-to-one mentoring relationships. Please join me in supporting this excellent cause by going to bbbsnca.org and make a contribution. That's bbbsnca.org. Consider it done.
Do you miss the joy of reading because of blindness or disability? Here's great news about Choice Magazine Listening, a free talking magazine. You'll hear outstanding articles and stories chosen from leading publications such as The New Yorker, National Geographic, Smithsonian, Time, Sports Illustrated, and many more. Please call 1-888-7-CHOICE or on the web www.choicemagazinelistening.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. And this is your host, Peter Schwartz. We have a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Scott Hancock, who's the executive director of the Maryland Municipal League, Barry Dwyer, who's a partner founder with Exion Solutions, Tom Gallardi, who's the president of Digitech Computer Products, and Corey Brown, who's the executive director of Capital Partners for Education. First up is Scott Hancock, the executive director for the Maryland Municipal League. Tell us a little bit about the Maryland Municipal League, Scott.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me here today. The Maryland Municipal League is the trade association for Maryland's 157 cities and towns. Our mission basically is to advocate on behalf of the cities and towns before the Maryland General Assembly, before the Congress, and also to educate our elected leaders to help them become more effective municipal leaders.
When was the organization founded?
1936, by the former mayor of the city of Annapolis, Lewis Phipps, and we actually named our building after him.
And what would you say this organization's major purpose is?
Well, I think there needs to be some group that organizes, facilitates the networking opportunities for mayors from across the state to come together and learn how to do their jobs better. And that's, I think, what the Maryland Municipal League does best.
Mm-hmm. And when did you join the organization?
I came in December of 1995, so I just celebrated my 18th year.
Why did you want to be a part of this organization to begin with?
Well, I had been actively involved in the Municipal League as a city manager in Maryland shortly after I finished school. I became a city manager in one of the communities and was very active in the Municipal League as a manager and as a member of the Municipal League. Left the state, took two additional jobs as managers, and then when the position of executive director was open in 1995, I applied for the job and got it.
And what do you enjoy most about your position today?
I love working with the municipal officials. I think the thing about municipal politicians, pretty much in every state and the commonwealths across the country, is these folks are really interested in doing what's good and best for their community, and not so much what's going to get them the next highest office.
So for you, is it about bringing people together for the purpose of doing that, or the politics side of it?
Well, the thing that I like the most about the job is probably the ability to facilitate these things. The politics can be trying for people like me because we cannot be involved in the political process. We are a nonpartisan association. And most of our cities and towns in Maryland do not have partisan elections. There are only three out of the 157 that do. So I have to stay aloof. I have to stay away from the politics, but I still have to play in that arena. I still have to be involved in that arena.
How young were you when you realized you were good at bringing people together?
Oh, gosh, it probably goes back. I didn't realize, but if I thought about it, it would go back to my elementary school days.
Well, what were you doing pulling people together?
Probably saving little girls on the playground.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I've always been a leader. It's always been my job, but I've always felt that the best way for me to be successful and for me to do the best I can do for people is to try to bring the best out in them, facilitate the opportunities for them to be involved and to lead.
Why? What makes bringing the best out of people so important to you?
Because if everybody is working as a team, the team, if you can get the best out of each member of the team, you've got an unbeatable team.
When did you realize that?
Just now. No, I probably very early on in my city manager days when I first started as a city manager.
Yeah. What were you doing before you were doing this?
Before I was the executive director, I was a city manager in three communities in Rhode Island, Maine, and Maryland.
And before that?
And before that, I was a police officer in Ocean City, Maryland.
So how does talk about the transition?
Very interesting transition, and I guess the thing that's very mind-boggling to me as I look back on it is how did I get from being a police officer
right.
to executive director? The police job was something I wanted to do from the time I was a kid. I loved law enforcement. I loved police work, and I thought that that's what I really wanted to do. And so I spent a lot of time. I actually have my degree in sociology, criminal justice, political science from Western Maryland College, my undergraduate degree, and decided I wanted to be a police officer. Didn't take too long after I was sworn as a police officer, a couple of years, to realize that that probably wasn't the best fit for me. And I had worked for city manager in Ocean City and got to know him pretty well. And sort of was intrigued by the fact that the city manager is the city boss over the police department and the fire department right. and all of the departments of the city. And so I knew that I was going to have to further my education in order to continue to do that that career path. So that's where I went.
What's it take to be a good city manager?
It takes a lot of patience. It takes tenacity. It takes a sympathetic ear. You have to care about people.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to get your you have to be able to take one good thing that will happen in your day and turn that into the best thing that's happened in your life.
Well, it sounds pretty rewarding. Why leave that and become an executive director of a nonprofit?
And I've asked myself that a couple of times because I've been the executive director for 18 years.
Yeah.
And I guess if I wanted to go back and be a city manager, I probably could do that. The executive director's job takes everything that I did as a city manager. I get to work with all the city managers, all the elected officials throughout the state, but now I get to work with them in a little bit different role. Plus, I get to work with the elected officials at the state level. So I get to work with the state legislature and the governor and the lieutenant governor and try to make sure that the things that are most interesting and most important to city and town governments is what we focus on.
Where are you from, Scott?
I'm from the Eastern Shore of Maryland, right outside of Ocean City, where I was born and raised.
What were Mom and Dad doing when you were growing up?
My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And my dad was the assistant superintendent of schools for our local school system.
What do you remember most about growing up?
I remember the very strong religious background that I grew up in. My parents were both Southern Baptist and raised my brother, who's 6 years younger than I, and myself as Southern Baptist. We went to church a lot. I sang a lot. I really enjoyed the opportunities I had there. I enjoyed the structure. We didn't party. We didn't do anything outside either the church or the home or my family.
How do you suppose that shaped you to who you are today?
I think it gave me a very strong work ethic. I think it gave me a passion for people. It helped me to understand that it is about people. It's about relationships, and that's why we succeed.
So you've been with this organization for 18 years. What's changed the most looking across all that time?
I think the respect that the organization and that municipalities in general have with the Maryland General Assembly has been the biggest change. When I first arrived 18 years ago, county government was so strong and people understood what county government did. Cities were fairly small in comparison. The county governments really did have a stronghold on pretty much everything that happened in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And now, instead of hearing, well, what do the counties want, I now hear, what do the municipalities and the counties want?
Right.
And that makes me very proud.
So you were saying in the green room earlier that you're coming out of a pretty difficult period.
Yes.
What was it like to help these city managers get their organizations through a time when resources were so thin?
It's been very difficult when we saw, for instance, our highway user revenues, which is the main state shared
right.
revenue we have in Maryland for municipalities, drop 96.8%.
How did
in
you
one
get
year.
Through that? How did you help these folks get through?
Well, I think more than anything else, it was a matter of adjusting. Everybody was dealing with it.
Right.
We were all dealing with it personally, having difficulty paying our bills. People were being laid off around us. Cities and towns are a reflection of the people that live there and the leadership of the cities and towns. They understand what people were going through. So just like people were tightening their belts, cities and towns were tightening their belts.
Yeah.
And so what we were able to do is share best practices with the cities and towns in the state, what was going on in other parts of the country.
So across your 18 years, what would you say is your proudest moment?
Proudest moment, probably with the professionally with the association
yeah.
would be the recognition that we are getting from the legislature and from the governor and the administration that cities and towns are important, and they do care about us, and we do make a difference. We make for a better quality of life in Maryland.
That's great. Scott, what's the website address?
Website, www.mdmunicipal.org.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Scott Hancock, who's the executive director for the Maryland Municipal League. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us for this segment is Kimberly Stevens, who's the business development manager of a company called CBiz. What is CBiz, Kimberly?
CBiz is a national provider of services in the areas of finance and employee benefits.
What would you say makes your company special?
The fact that we're able to bring people together across a wide spectrum of capabilities and services to provide solid solutions to our customers.
So you help your customers find people that will help them with their things that they do for their customers.
That's exactly it.
And what's the role you play with the company?
I serve as a business development manager, and in that capacity, I work to identify people who may have needs for the services that we offer. I meet with them, listen to what the issues are that they might have, and think of the people that we have in our midst to help them.
Why do you like your job?
I like it for that very reason. I enjoy meeting people and getting to know what their business is and working to connect them with people who can help them meet their goals. It's
what makes you so good at it?
What is helpful is that I genuinely care, and I do want them to have success in their business. And I'm also very excited about the talent and capabilities that we have to offer. And so since I'm able to believe in that and care about the outcome, it helps me to be effective in what I do.
Great. And I understand somebody who would be interested to reach you could find you at www.cbiz.com-midatlantic.com. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. We've been speaking with Kimberly Stevens, who's the business development manager for a company called CBiz. And I'm Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and that was your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce, and brought to you today by Bernhardt Wealth Management, helping to make work optional for you. For this segment, we have a young man by the name of Barry Dwyer, who's a partner founder with a company called Exion. What is Exion Solutions, Barry?
Exion Solutions is an IT consulting company focused on the healthcare industry, primarily in the commercial sector, but moving rapidly into the government sector with the VA.
So give us an example of an IT solution in the healthcare sector.
Sure. So we work a lot on claims processing systems, portals for members to manage their own benefits, as well as enrollment systems. So enterprise-wide, large member-facing applications.
How did you get the idea to do this?
The company itself, I've always worked in the IT consulting arena. I've only ever worked for consulting companies. So at some point in my career, it was time to go out on my own and give it a shot.
IT consulting, though? Why IT consulting? Always been doing only that.
Well, I got into the business through a friend of my father's. I had a checkered past relative to college. And
we'll get to your checkered past in a minute. Tell us about it. What is it about IT solutions that was attractive to you?
I like technology. I love technology. And I had an opportunity for the company back in 85 to buy their first PC, and I was fascinated by it. You know, it was an old tiny little IBM thing, and they let me play around with it and actually build the first recruiting application they had. So I got into technology very early, loved it. I still love technology. I drool over every new widget that comes out. And
you built the first application?
Yeah. So
did you have a software coding background?
I didn't really.
So how did you do it?
I had a manual, and I banged my head against the wall a lot. I mean, back in the day, it was very, very difficult. There wasn't an internet, obviously. There was one manual. There was nobody to talk to.
So what is it about you that had to persevere and see that thing through?
Eventually, as I got a little older, I figured that I've got to do what I want to do, and I want to succeed, and I'm a competitive guy. So, you know, given the opportunity to do something and realize that I was at a good company where there's going to be more opportunities, I just worked very, very hard at doing it and just persevered and plowed my way through it.
Is it for you, is it a question of believing in yourself or what?
I'm very loyal to others, and I really want to give back to the people who give me opportunities. And I like success, and I don't like failure. And I was challenged by DB2 was the language. It was a pre-compiler language, and I was very challenged by it. But at the same time, I saw what its capabilities were. So I just kept pushing forward as it rolled on.
So the company's 12 years old, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And so you were with a consulting company, and at some point it just said, I gotta start this business?
Yeah, so I was with the first firm that I was with, IMI Systems, and they got sold, and kind of the culture changed. So I left there for another opportunity, and I was the poster child for not evaluating a company before you go to it. I went to that next company for about 11 months. And then I became the COO of about a $60 million company. We got bought by a $300 million company, and that got bought by a larger company. So I suddenly found myself really a small business guy at a billion-dollar organization, and I realized that no matter what I did, whether I was the first guy in working hardest or whether I was the last guy in and slacking off, nobody cared what I did, and I just had to get out of there. So this was at the end of the last recession. In the fourth quarter of 2002, the industry flattened. And that's when we launched. And so we.
What were the early days like?
Oh, the early days were crazy. I mean, I had a non-compete from a sales perspective. Our first opportunity, we actually got into Fannie Mae, an opportunity at Fannie Mae through our banker, who knew some vice president at Fannie Mae, and we went in to see him. It's like day three of the organization, and he says, "So what do you guys do?" I said, "We don't do anything." And he said, "Well, how long have you guys been in business?" I said, "What day is it?" And he peeked around the corner at his admin outside, like, "Who are these people and why are they in my office?" But we said, basically, listen, we've been doing this business a long time. We're honest. If we screw anything up, you never have to talk to us again. Just give us an opportunity. And he did.
And you got one.
We got one. Several layers down the food chain, we got one. And we exploited it, and that's basically been our thing. We go in and talk to people and are honest with them and say, give us an opportunity. And
how did you finance the early days?
Bootstrapped.
Yeah. Credit cards?
A little bit of savings and a lot of spaghetti. I was driving at the old company. I had a very nice package. I was doing very well and driving a nice big Lexus. And then shortly thereafter, I was driving a used Mercury Sable. And, you know.
Was there ever a moment of doubt?
There was lots of moments of doubt.
How'd you deal with it?
It's just perseverance. It's just, you know, I do believe in myself, and it's just pushing through the hard times. I'm dogged about things. You just have to do it.
So you've had some success. Mm-hmm. What do you like most about your job today?
I really enjoy strategy. I really enjoy the vision piece of things. I would much rather conceive a business and get it up and going and run a business. So we're constantly tweaking the model and constantly looking at how can we improve, how can we slice and dice what we're doing in different ways to make it more valuable to our clients and a better environment for our employees. Mm-hmm. And that's the fun stuff. It's the conceiving of the idea and the, you know, going from a napkin to an actual implementation. counting the beans every day is not a lot of fun. But
all right, so take us back to your checkered past. It was a dark and stormy night when
it
all began.
A dark and stormy night. My kids are very proud of this for some strange reason, but I've been to 10 colleges and I don't have a degree. A couple of them.
You were booted out of all of them, is what I hear.
Well, I wasn't booted out of
all of them.
I was booted out of a couple of them. Some for discipline reasons, some for just grades. By the time I got my feet under me and my career was underway, I was actually going to George Mason down here, and then we got pregnant, and it was just not time to be a dad and to be a full time worker and to be at school. So I said, all right, I'll just put the school on the back burner for a while, and then I'll go back and get it.
But so what was it about the college situation that was so difficult for you?
The first school I went to was very, very disciplined. And I recognized in high school that I didn't have great discipline, that I needed discipline. And so I went to New York Maritime College, SUNY Maritime. It's a great school, and I really wanted to be a naval architect as well. But I knew I needed that discipline. And the first thing I did as soon as they put a uniform on me was to rebel against that discipline. And I did that very, very well. And they couldn't figure out whether to throw me out for grades or discipline, so they just threw me out. So
what's it like to get thrown out?
Oh, it's really hard. It's really hard to call up your father and say,
man.
Dad, I'm done. It's very, very hard.
Apparently you didn't learn your lesson because you did it nine
no,
more times.
Well, see, the problem was Maritime was so structured that when I went to my next school, which is really, you know, my first true college experience, I just went wild. Now I had freedom. I remember the first night I was in the dorm at the second school, it was getting to be about 10 o'clock, and I said to the people in the hallway, I said, well, I guess we got to start doing lights out and get ready for bed. And they all looked at me like I was crazy, but in my mind, it's 10 o'clock, it's lights out. In their mind, it's time to go to the bars. And so I excelled at that as well. And but I eventually figured out which way was up. And
so you have this great relationship with the sea through boating.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about how that began and a little bit across time and how it shaped you and why you like it so much.
Really everything, where I am today, I can really go back to the relationships that I got through sailing. So my dad was a sailor as a kid. He had a little 14-foot sailboat. And when he married my mom, they had an 18-footer. And by the time I came along, they had a wooden 25-foot boat that he had rebuilt. And I did my first race in a bassinet under the deck there at 6 months old. So I was always on the boat. Growing up, it was right across the street. And it wasn't a grandiose boat or anything like that. My dad was a school teacher, but it was a nice little boat. And I was always on the water. And we raced and we cruised. And we got to be very close to a bunch of families. And one of those families was a gentleman named Bob Foreman. And I ended up working for him for 13 years. And he really gave me my first career opportunity. That's where I worked on that first computer system. And so I went in there as a gopher, and 13 years later I left there as vice president of a region with 200 people working for me. And it just, all those relationships around the water, as well as being on a sailboat and getting a boat from point A to point B, particularly if you're racing the boat, it takes absolute teamwork. The person who's steering the boat can't trim the sails. The person who's steering the boat can't be the navigator, can't be the tactician. You need a good working crew. And the boats that I sail on now, we typically have 8 guys and girls. And if they're not working in concert, things don't go well. So I learned teamwork from the water. My relationships come from the people on the water. And it's just been fabulous.
How would you describe the culture of your company?
Very casual. Our belief is that you hire good athletes, we call them, you know, somebody who's got all the basic skills, and we will teach them how to do, whether it's going to be sales or recruiting or whatever it is from an infrastructure perspective. We can teach them how to do that stuff, but you have to have the right cultural fit.
Is it a lot like sailing a team?
It absolutely is. I mean, it's consensus building. You know, I'm one of the partners, but, you know, I have 24-year-olds coming down the hall and busting my chops, and, you know, and they're comfortable with it. I mean, they understand respect, but they also understand play, and they I don't want to make it be too much of a cliche, but we work hard and we play hard.
Sure.
And we have a very, very good time. You know, we want people to be successful. We give them the tools to be successful, and we're like parents to them in ways.
Is your father aware of your success?
My father has passed away, unfortunately, but at my going away meeting, or my going away party from that company I was with for a long time, I found out that he's the one who got me that job. I was at a kind of low point down in Florida, and my father had called up the owner of this company and said, you're going to hire my son. And he said, you should call this guy up and see if he'll give you a job. And he eventually convinced me to do it, and lo and behold, he gave me a job. And so 13 years later, I'm on the way out of the organization, and the owner of the company, Bob Foreman, gets up there, and he's talking about, you know, what a good hire I was and things like that. And he said, I really am thankful that Barry's father called me up and convinced me to give him a job. And at that point, my father was deceased, and I had never knew it.
Oh,
I never
wow.
knew that he had done that for me. Yeah.
He'd be proud of you, though, today.
He'd be very proud of me, yeah. He would be very surprised and very proud.
What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
I think starting and running this company.
Yeah.
It has been, you know, there have been, you know, when the market fell out of the financial services industry and we were doing primarily work in the financial services industry, there was a couple of payroll cycles on credit cards and things like that, which is always a little bit nerve-wracking.
Right.
And just persevering through that. It's been very hard at times. We're doing well. We're doing very well now, but it was hard in the beginning.
And what's the website address?
www.xcion, which is xscion.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Barry Dwyer, who is the partner founder with xcion. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Matt Beardall, Market President, Maryland, D.C., and Virginia of J.P. Morgan Chase Bank. Matt, what is J.P. Morgan Chase Bank?
Well, we're a large global bank that takes care of individuals, families, companies, corporations, and multinationals.
And what do your clients appreciate most about working with you?
Really, I think it's that we bring the depth and breadth of a large global bank to our local communities through people that live in the community they serve with local decision-making capabilities.
And what does your perfect client need when they come to you?
Well, I think one of the main differentiators for us is our international capabilities. So companies that are here in the Washington area that are looking to go global, we're an ideal fit for a company like that.
And why do people like to work for J.P. Morgan Chase Bank?
Well, we're responsive, we have local decision making, and we have great products and services.
What keeps you coming to work every day?
I think the fact that every day is different. Every day we get to interact with a different type of business and learn new things and try to help advise companies in their strategy.
What's the website?
It's www.chase.com.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce, and today's show brought to you by Bernhardt Wealth Management, helping to make work optional for you. And for this segment, we have a young man by the name of Tom Gallardi, who's the president of Digitech Computer Products. Tell us a little bit about Digitech, Tom.
Digitech's a nationwide wholesale distributor of IT and consumable products, specializing in the storage industry and in the printing industry, established in 1998.
And how big or small is it today?
$150 million in revenue approximately, with six locations for sales and three warehouses across the country.
And when did you join the firm?
I joined the firm 5.5 years ago.
In the role of president?
Yes.
And why did you want the job?
Great challenge. I've been in the industry for quite a while. Very interested in staying in this industry. Great opportunity. We have an owner that's a wonderful owner that has a good vision of where we want to go, and it just seemed like the perfect fit for me.
It's a tough industry, though, isn't it? It's commoditized and all that.
Absolutely. You've done some homework. Yes, it is. It is a tough industry, but we have, I will say, probably the best leadership team in the entire industry. We've all got a lot of experience in various facets of the business. And we bring a very unique approach to it. So, yes, although it's tough, it's still a lot of fun for us.
What does it take for a company like this to be successful in this space? Something other than low price, right?
Absolutely. Well, boy, that's a bad word.
Right.
Those are two bad words. but flexibility. There's a large sector of the business in the United States. What we call it the SMB market, the small to medium business. There's
right.
about 35,000 resellers in the U.S. that are anywhere from small to relatively large that need somebody, and that's where we specialize. So with between flexibility and creativity, and you know what, when you're selling commoditized products, you want to be fun and flexible.
Right. And why were you, and don't be modest, why were you the best pick for this job 5.5 years ago?
Well, let's just say I still hope I'm the best pick for it today. I've run other organizations in this business and competitors of Digitech,
mm-hmm.
and we were very successful. And through a series of events, whether it was being a takeover from a large company, or it was a or they went out of business for other reasons, I've I've had the experience, both from the manufacturing side and the distribution side, because I have spent years on the manufacturing side of the business as
right.
well.
Would you characterize yourself as a turnaround guy?
I hate to characterize myself as that, but I've had to do it so many times that it's become a reality, so yeah.
Why are you so good at it?
I take an approach where I want to look down on the business. A lot of people have said it's silly. I was taught this way when I worked for 3M. It was it's done me well, where I look down on a business and play a game almost with the like chess pieces.
So by down, you kind of go meta to the situation and can see the whole thing
correct.
From a distance?
Correct. And then see where it's weak, see where the hole is, and then try and plug that hole or move it.
Have you always been good at this kind of ability to look at things from a distance and see what's good and wrong, I guess?
I won't say I learned it in business, but I think I had that before that. And
where do you think that showed up?
Well, I think it showed up a lot when I was young in sports, because I was never satisfied with the role I had to play in a team. I always wanted to be the leader of the team. I was always wanted to be the spokesman, maybe just a loudmouth, but I wanted to be the spokesman for the team. And you look at the game differently. You want to be a coach. You want to be a player. And I've always kept that mentality, so I'm always looking outside of what's in front of me.
So take us back to the athletic piece of this. You had this ability to step out of the sport itself to do what? Be more effective in the sport?
Yes. In a lot of respects, that's it. You're boiling it down to probably the best thing. Somebody could say, yeah, he's on the sidelines because he wasn't good enough to be on the – but when you're in the game, you're in the game.
Yeah.
And they talk about vision, and they talk about being there, and they talk about the games moving in slow motion. And unless you've ever experienced it, it's hard to understand that. But when you can break it down in your head and say, I want to look at that a little bit differently, you see it now with football players when they're looking at game film, and they're looking at film, pictures on the sideline. It's just a different way of looking at it.
Well, you impress me as a pretty competitive guy, so there's got to be some passion and emotion involved with that. How do you keep your emotions out of the business so you don't make bad decisions?
Very hard. I was taught in business that if you make it a decision and you're emotional about it, it's the wrong decision.
Right.
So I purposely go the other direction.
Well, how do you keep that apart from it and yet still have it available to you?
You know what? I'll get emotional and I'll walk away, or I'll just shut down for a second, just to get that, just to have that break in the emotion that it kind of dissipates. And I'm not saying there's no passion, because with passion becomes an emotion in the
sure.
band on the table and whatever, however people want to show it. But I will take that. Cognitive stop in my thinking, just to move away. It might be a day later, it might be a minute later.
When did your competitive nature first show up?
Very young.
How young?
Probably. I don't ever remember not being competitive.
So give us take us back. What was home life like, and what was it like being in that?
It was great. It's funny. You look back at life and you go, I wish I had this and I wish I had that, and you really had nothing. We grew up poor.
Yeah.
And when you grow up a certain way, you just don't know any other way.
Right.
And you can look across the highway or the street or whatever and say, I wish I had that, but it doesn't mean anything to you because you don't know what it is. Father died when I was born. I have a great my mother remarried to a great man who was actually my godfather. I'm a third of six kids. We were all pretty competitive because back in those days, mother raised the kids and the father went and worked two jobs. And I learned real quick, I didn't want to work construction because my dad worked all morning, all day, and then he'd work all night. I wanted to get the education, and so I was going to do everything I could to.
And where were you in the birth order?
Third.
So what was that experience like?
I got smacked around a lot.
Yeah. What did that teach you?
Well, to put up my hands. You. When you're the middle child, you cause a lot of trouble, and then you're crafty because you know.
You learn from your
others. You learn from others. You learn from your mistakes, too.
Tell us about one of the more difficult things you faced as a youngster.
Wow, how young?
What was the first thing that came to mind when I asked the question?
Boy, really nothing came to mind. First thing.
Well, you grew up in some tough times.
Well, I don't say tough. I mean, again, to me it was fantastic because I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
I mean, looking back, I can make it sound like it was horrible, but it was. It was actually
good. Did you go to college?
Yes.
What did you major in?
Public health.
And then what did you do?
I worked for the health department for a number of years, 6 years.
And tell us a little bit about that and why you didn't stay.
I became an inspector. I first went to university to become a teacher, and there was no jobs outside in the Toronto area where I'm from. So I would have had to move way up north, and I wasn't prepared to do that. So I went into public health and really enjoyed that field, and I became a health inspector, but then I specialized in communicable diseases, some of them that people don't want to talk about, but they are entertaining, and did that for a number of years. But when I joined the government, I was the youngest by far, and the government had a hierarchical system where you got promoted based on seniority, which meant I'm never going to get promoted, and my pay grades could go up to a certain amount, and I got there very quickly. And when I realized that I was at the ceiling, I started thinking I got to do something else. And people kept offering me sales jobs because I would go into establishments, or I'd be working with people with diseases where I'd be working with them at night, and I'd have to our rule was keep the sanctity of the marriage intact. Do not cause a divorce.
Right.
So I would have to do things undercover, and I got very good at positioning, I'll say.
Right.
And people kept saying, man, if you can talk to people like this and preserve a marriage or get somebody to put in a new kitchen in their restaurant, why don't you take a job in sales? And I finally succumbed and tried and applied for my first one, which was at 3M, and after almost 8 months of interviews, and I got in.
What do you take most from your experience with 3M, looking back on it?
Oh, I'll tell you what, world-class organization, as everybody knows.
Right.
The education I got there, the leadership I got there, the mentorship, it was everything that I built my career, and I built a lot of what I do in business on what I've taken away from there.
Mm-hmm.
People get sick of me hearing me saying it, but when you live it and you're going through it and you're young, boy, it's a life changer.
How would you characterize your style of leadership today?
That's good, because it depends on who's in the room. But I would say that...
So you're an adaptive style?
You
can pick and choose approaches in the moment?
A lot of times I will.
Where'd you learn how to do that?
Again, that was just from people that I've worked for. I had leaders that would be like that. They would be the ones that... When you asked me before about when can you break off the emotion, I couldn't always do that.
Yeah.
I had leaders when I started out that said, hey, okay, next time this happens, don't do that. And so I took the best lessons from them, and I still credit them with a lot of everything that I've been able to achieve.
Yeah. Vince Lombardi says winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Is that true for you?
It certainly is. you can say second place is the first loser, or, show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. But, yeah, I don't like losing. If I lose, I had a colleague of mine, and we were both vice presidents of another company, and we used to walk around saying, and we'd go together and make calls on other businesses, and we would say we never lose, because if we lost, we'd go back, we'd regroup, we'd postmortem it and say, okay, this is how we didn't do well that game, but we'll go back and win.
Is there a loss that you didn't recover and that taught you something, looking back on it, a defeat or a failure or something that you really, that happened, I'm better?
And all the ones that did, you go back and it was, yes, it was bad preparation. It was a stupid moment. It was just a brain fade at the time that you just, it was something. It was all based on me. It wasn't, the ones where I'm really being honest about it, it would be, I dropped the ball somewhere in there.
So since you're so serious about your own development and winning, what do you have to become as a leader in the business to take the company into the next 5 years?
I have to be better at what I do. I want to be better at what I do. I want to be more multifaceted. I think I'm pretty good at a lot of things. There are some people that are experts at one thing. I'm a good generalist. Mm-hmm. I know enough about everything to be dangerous, and some things I know a lot of. I think I have to do a better job of developing those areas, just like I think everybody does.
Right. What would you say your proudest moment up till now is, Tom?
Well, it's probably cliche to say that the proudest moment in business or in life?
Both.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was my 32nd anniversary yesterday, so my proudest moment in life is the fact that I've been able to keep a wonderful woman with me, and she hasn't tossed me yet.
And business?
Getting to be the president of a company.
Yeah.
It's something that I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to lead from that position.
Great. What's the website address?
www.digitech.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Tom Gallardi, who is the president of Digitech Computer Products. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Colin Callahan, and this is your Business Spotlight. What's your name?
Dana Weinberg.
And what's your company?
I am the CEO of Mid-Atlantic Commercial Real Estate, a commercial brokerage company in Fairfax, Virginia.
And what makes your business special?
Well, the clients work with a very seasoned commercial broker who really makes the clients feel like they're the only client.
Mm-hmm. And why do your customers appreciate you?
Well, clients tell me that it's very refreshing to have somebody very responsive who understands the construction business, mm-hmm. can protect them from getting overcharged, mm-hmm. and is truly interested in their best interest, not just me collecting another commission.
Mm-hmm. And why do you enjoy your work?
I really like meeting all different types of people, and there are all types of people out there.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, I really like making my clients happy.
Uh-huh. Great. And how can someone reach you?
Best way to reach me is on my cell phone, 703-967-2771.
Great. We've been speaking with Dana Weinberg, CEO of Mid-Atlantic Commercial Realty. This has been your Business Spotlight with Colin Callahan.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. And for this segment, we have a young man by the name of Kari Brown, who's the executive director for an organization called Capital Partners for Education. What is Capital Partners for Education, Kari?
Capital Partners for Education, or CPE, is a one-on-one mentoring program that prepares motivated low-income high school students to get to and through college.
It's a one-on-one mentoring program. So right. Tell us a little bit about what that actually means.
So we're actually a really dynamic model, and mentoring is the cornerstone of our program. But we also have individualized support from our staff. We have very close partnerships with high-quality schools, high schools and universities. We have college and career programs, and we offer scholarships. So we take a very holistic approach to working with motivated low-income youth.
How old is the organization?
We're celebrating our 20th year this year.
20th year?
Yeah.
How long have you been associated with it?
So I've been the executive director for 12 years.
Uh-huh. Why you? Why were you the ideal pick, and why did you want to do it?
I was the one person that they could convince to take it on. No. When I started, I was the only employee at CPE. And it was a very high potential organization.
How did you know?
Well, I'd met some of the board members.
Uh-huh.
I knew they had some great supporters, and I knew that they'd had some early success, though it was very, very small. It was largely a volunteer-run organization when I came on. But the mission really spoke to me, and I thought that they had the core of some things that were aligned with what I wanted to do. When I started, I came on as the acting executive director, and I agreed to be the acting executive director for 2 weeks. And I was just basically moving to Washington, staying on a friend's couch, and while I was going to explore other job opportunities. But CPE grew on me, and I started to see myself as being a real executive director. I hadn't even really wanted to be one before.
What do you like most about what you do?
I used to have very close relationships with the students that we support. As we've grown and we have more staff who work directly with the youth, my passion is more toward growing the organization and improving it. I have, and I still hold some relationships with kids, but fewer. But really, I'm driven by growth and making an impact in our community.
Has that always been true for you, growing things?
I think it took me a while to find this is the perfect job for me.
Why?
It's very personal mm-hmm. for me.
What makes it personal?
Well, I always thought that I might be an educator. I've come from a family of educators,
mm-hmm.
and though I didn't start the early part of my career in education, I saw myself going in this direction, and it's important for me to make change. I see a lot of inequity in Washington. We have, the most college grads, highest percentage of college grads, one of the highest concentrations of wealth of anywhere in the U.S., and yet we have astronomical poverty. There's two Washingtons.
Mm-hmm.
And and CPE tries to be a bridge between the two. I think that's important. I think for those of us who've had opportunities, it's important for us to give back. And we try to do that with our kids that are in CPE and get them to – that's one of the core values of our program.
So a lot of people see inequity and maybe they write a check to a charity or something like that. For you, it was a call to action.
Yeah.
Well, what was going on? When did that first happen for you?
I started after college. I played professional basketball overseas, and then when my career ended, I became a high school basketball coach in the Boston area. And I was working with motivated, very hardworking kids who were very poor students because no one had really expected much of them. As a student, we had high expectations of them as athletes, but no one really had high expectations of them as students. And I thought that that was really awful in selling them short. And I decided.
So the reason. Are you saying that the reason why most of these kids failed was nobody was paying attention to them?
People paid attention to them and passed them through, no one really expected much of them. And I always have felt like people will rise to the level of expectations placed upon them.
So when you first took over the job, did you also create a lot of the program that exists today?
I did. It was very bare bones when I started. It was a one-person operation. Mm-hmm. We had a very small budget. And the core of it was providing scholarships for low-income kids. But I saw a whole array of other needs that weren't being met by the schools who were doing a great job, but were just really not equipped to meet all the needs that low income. Poverty is a very complex issue. There's not a one silver bullet that solves for it. So CPE tries to level the playing field for our kids by providing an array of services, be it mentoring, be it exposure to careers, financial literacy, understanding how to budget and understanding the college process. Our kids, they're the first in their families to go to college. They don't have role models in their community to help them with this.
How many kids did you help last year?
Last year we had 135. This year, nearly 200.
Wow. Yeah. How are you funded?
We're completely privately funded.
Through donations?
Donations, individuals, foundations, corporations.
Mm-hmm. How could someone who would like to know more about you find out more about you?
Well, I'd encourage people to go to our website, www.cpfe.org, as in Capital Partners for Education.
And how do you go about finding your mentors?
We recruit our mentors through local corporate partnerships, through word of mouth. And we've actually done very well with mentor recruitment. We also look for other volunteers who can teach our kids career skills, expose them to other career opportunities, teach them the financial literacy skills.
Yeah. Where are you from, Kari?
I'm from Boston, Massachusetts.
And mom and dad, what were they doing growing up?
Mom was a teacher in early childhood development, and my father's a photographer, retired photographer.
What do you remember most about your childhood?
I had a great childhood, loving parents, grew up in a great community, lots of support, lots of opportunities and high expectations from my folks. But
what were you like as a kid?
I think I was a good kid, quiet, good athlete, stayed out of trouble. Average kid. And one of the things that actually drives me is I didn't think I was a particularly extraordinary kid. Had I grown up in a neighborhood where our kids in CPE grew up, I wouldn't have graduated from college probably. I wouldn't, without the parents that I have.
Right.
I think it's unfortunate that a lot of kids, just by the nature of where they're born, have very different opportunities than I had.
Right. Other than your mom and dad, who are the significant role models in your life?
Great coaches and teachers.
What'd you take away from those?
Family members.
As a rule, those coaches and teachers, if you had to look back on it, was there two or three things that you would attribute to them?
The ones who have the biggest impact are the ones who, take a personal interest in you.
And there's
the
mentoring thing.
See things in you that you didn't see yourself.
Yeah.
I had a college professor who was a mentor to me who, the first assignment that I turned in, he said, I'm not even going to grade this. You need to come back and do something better. And I was, I was expecting to coast along, but he saw something in me that I didn't see, and he pushed me to the next paper I turned in. He also said, "No, this is better, but it's still not good.
Wow,
do it better." And that's a type of mentoring that I think that that all people need.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there an example or a special kid that stands out above all the others across all your years of doing this? One or two?
Well, there's one that I've been in touch with recently because she's come back and spoken at a couple of fundraising dinners. And her name is Sarah, and actually she was just featured in a story in the Washington Post this week. She is a grew up with a single mom. Very low-income household, first in her family to go to college. She was extremely determined, hardworking, went to Cornell, was a student leader on campus, could have gone to Wall Street, but decided to go into teaching. She did Teach for America. Hmm. She works with the same type of kids in the Boston area that CPE supports. And, she gives back. In part because that was something that I hope that we instilled in her.
Where do you want the organization to be 5 years from now?
We have an aggressive growth plan. We're planning to double our student body in 2 years.
From 200 to 400?
From 200 to 400.
Wow.
We've extended our mentoring into the college years, and we're expanding partnerships with high-performing charter high schools, and hope to expand into the public schools as well. So in 5 years, I hope to see us near 1,000 students, thinking about other cities.
Are your mom and dad aware of what you're up to?
Sure. I talk to them every day.
Yeah. If I were interviewing them, would they be surprised? Would they be proud? What would they say about you?
Well, I hope they'd be proud. I'm not sure if they'd be surprised. I don't know. You'd have to ask them, but perhaps surprised. I would hope that they'd be proud. I think that I'm doing something that they find important. Right. Also,
what's the website address, Kari?
It's cpfe.org, as in Capital Partners for Education.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Kari Brown, who's the Executive Director for Capital Partners for Education. We have had a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Scott Hancock, the executive director of Maryland Municipal League, Barry Dwyer, the partner founder for Exion Solutions, Tom Gallardi, the president of Digitech Computer Products, and finally, Kari Brown, the executive director for Capital Partners for Education. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience. For that, we wouldn't have a radio show. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Hi, I'm Rory Coakley with Coakley Realty. Did you know that Big Brothers Big Sisters utilizes over 100 plus years experience to deliver life-changing mentoring to at-risk children? Big Brothers Big Sisters helps vulnerable kids reach their full potential through one-to-one mentoring relationships. Please join me in supporting this excellent cause by going to bbbsnca.org and make a contribution. That's bbbsnca.org. Consider it done.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserve. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal